Accession number 19533, Reel 1.
Ron Dixon, Reel 1. Where were you born, please?
Manchester.
Which year was this?
1923.
Did you grow up and have your schooling in Manchester?
Yes.
Which school did you go to?
I went to First All Clement Road School, Moss Side. And then I went to Manchester Central High. And then I had 12 months at Manchester Grammar.
How old were you when you finished your schooling?
16.
So that would have been in 1939?
39.
What happened to you on leaving school?
I went into the post office.
This was just before war started?
That was just before war started.
Did
It was.
Had you joined the TA before the war?
No.
Did you hear Neville Chamberlain declare war on Germany?
I did indeed. I was on my way to North Wales on holiday, cycling on a Sunday morning. And we stopped at a place about 11 o'clock. It was me and my friend. We'd on our bikes, we'd cycling, and a tent holiday it was there. And somebody came out and said, they've declared war. Said, have they? Yes. Oh, that was that.
How did you feel about it?
Didn't feel much about it. Didn't really know. Was more interested in going on holiday than the actual war. I thought, this is we're not going to be able to do the same things with having a war. But didn't think it was going to escalate to how it finished.
So were you in any bombing by the German Air Force?
Oh yes, I was. In fact, I was on the a telegraphist at Manchester at the post office, and quite a few nights when we were being bombed, we had to stay there, and we did incendiary in night watching and on the main building in Spring Gardens, Manchester. Putting a few incendiaries out, which had dropped on the building. And then we used to come home, you know, just after midnight, soon as the all clear had gone. And on one particular bombing, where the Blitz on Manchester, went home and it was a fire. The centre of the town was ablaze and buildings crumbling down, and of course I was on my bike and treading over hose pipes and the fire engines there. That was frightening. But there you are, that happened, and as you got used to that, you got used to the Blitz the bombing.
What was your address during the Blitz?
Fallowfield. I lived in Fallowfield.
Do you remember
Wilbraham Road.
Do you remember what number?
88 Wilbraham Road.
Were there many bombs in the Wilbraham Road area?
Quite a number of. It was a council house estate, and there was quite a number of houses blitzed. Quite close to Manchester City football ground.
Did any bombs fall near your house?
Yes, in fact, at the back of us was quite a number of houses was bombed. Quite a number of people killed.
Did you take shelter? Was there a shelter?
We had an Anderson shelter in the back garden, and most nights we used to go down there. My mother was an invalid. She had multiple sclerosis and she couldn't walk, so she had to be carried to the shelter. Practically every night we used to go into the shelter.
Who carried her?
My father.
What was it like in the shelter?
It was all right to start with, but it used to get hot and musty. There'd be a candle used to be going. That's the only lighting we had in it, was a candle. And of course, you know, most nights we used to sleep there. Better than a lot of, you know, other than the street shelters. Was our own, and we had it as comfortable as possible. Beds in there.
What comforts did you have inside?
We had mattresses, or made-up mattresses, and pillows, and of course blankets. So there was more or less four of us: my sister, and the mother and dad. My brother, he was already in the RAF. So there was only the four of us at home.
Was the Blitz a frightening experience for you?
It was indeed, yes. Yes.
Did you know anybody who was a casualty?
Oh, pardon?
Did you know anybody who was a casualty?
I knew quite a number of people who were casualties, yes. In fact, we every day used to put up a notice of people who had been killed and wounded in the Blitz, and we used to, and it was in alphabetical order, and we used to always go through them to see if we knew any of those people, and quite a number of times we came across a name that we didn't know, and of course, not really personally, but as neighbours, you know, you knew who they were, and well, you know, I can't say there was anyone really close to us that had got killed.
How do you think public morale stood up to the bombing?
I think it stood up very well. Well, nobody seemed to, there was no hint of, you know, giving in or anything like that. I think the people, you know, were very brave about things, and they took it as, well, if we got hit, that was it. We were lucky or we weren't.
Was there any hatred of the German Air Force?
Well, of course. You see, we could hear them. It was all, you could always tell a German aircraft coming over. There's always that boom, 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 boom. They're coming over, they're over, you see. And then the sirens would go. And then it was to down the shelters. Nobody was on the streets, and that I went into the Home Guard. I was in the Home Guard there in a company in Rusholme in Manchester, and of course we used to do, not every night, but most nights, we used to go and training and then guarding, mostly bridges, and didn't have a rifle, but we used to gather what we were supposed to do. I don't know if the Germans did land there, but we used to go there.
What kind of people were in this Home Guard company?
Mostly, I would think there was either young boys like myself, 16, too young to go into the forces, and then the 40-year-olds, that was too old to go into the forces. And my father was, he was in the special branch of the, a special constable during the war. Because he was, he'd be over 40, so he was never called up into the forces.
Was it the Home Guard unit very serious, or was there any farcical element like Dad's Army?
I don't think it was as, I was going to say as bad as Dad's Army, but Dad's Army is pretty good. No, that we did the proper training. I don't think I learned a lot in the. I wasn't in it long, you see, that just over 12 months, and then I think I was called up.
C- Can you tell me about being called up, please?
Yeah, well, I was called up in February 1942, and I was posted to the, I think it was called an infantry training unit, and it was all over the country, and at Squires Gate, Blackpool. In fact, it was the holiday camp at Squires Gate that we went into, so we all had little huts there that accommodated us, and I was there for doing infantry training from February to the end of May, and then they asked us what I wanted to be, and I said, well, they said, oh, well, they more or less told me you'd probably be better off in a signal unit, you see. See, you worked at the post office, what that had got to do with it, I don't know, but I had another short spell of training there for a few months, and then I was posted to an infantry battalion, the 2nd 4th South Lancashire, and there I went into the signal platoon.
Whereabouts did you find that battalion?
Otley, in Yorkshire. That was, I went from Squires Gate, Blackpool, to Otley.
What was this battalion like?
Well, it was quite a good, I had plenty of friends there and all that, and I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the training. We was in under canvas in Otley. And I was from Otley. We were then went to Folkestone. Went to Folkestone for further training. Of course, we didn't know it then, but we were training for the Second Front. And we were there till about with the unit, still in the 2nd 4th South Lancs, till 1943, about the middle of 43, and then we were told that we were going to change to a parachute battalion. General Gale came round and spoke to us. We had all the battalion together and told us what our role would be, you see, and he said you'd be you could volunteer, or if you didn't want to go in the parachute battalion, you would be posted to another regiment. So I volunteered because I think the reason was that all my friends were volunteering. So I thought, why not? You say it'd be great, yeah. And we knew the training was at Manchester, back home again. Thought great there, and to wear a red beret. So I went, but I passed all the medical doing there, and then I had an eye test, and I found out that I was colourblind. So they returned me to unit, you see. So from there, they wouldn't have me in the paras because I was colourblind. So I went to the... I think it was the 5th East Lancs. I think I put a 1st East Lancs on
first
that.
East Lancs
I think it was the 5th East Lancs. 5th East Lancs. And I forget where I was stationed, but I started training with them, and I went on a training course for Lance Corporal, more or less. And I got through. And then came word that they wanted volunteers out of that battalion to go for paras. So I thought, well, they don't know, I'll volunteer again. So I volunteered again, you see, for the paras, and didn't even have a colour vision test. got through, you see. So my friends, a few other out of the signal platoon of the 5th Lancs Battalion, and we went to do our training at Hardwick.
Before you go on to that,
yes.
Can you tell me anything about the 5th East Lancs?
Not a lot, because I wasn't in them long enough. But they saved a good set of boys there. That so I didn't remember much about that. In fact, it could have only been a couple of months, something like that, that I was with them.
Where were you with them?
And I can't even think of the actual place we were at. It was somewhere down south, I'm sure. But I couldn't think of...
So you were going to tell me about paratraining and what that was like, starting with Hardwick, please.
So there we went to a place called Clay Cross, Chesterfield. And there was in Nithin Huts there. And it was November-ish, cold. But there we did most of the training. The training was basic training, was hardening up, road walk and run. We used to do 10 milers, you know, every day again. And there was always slag heaps of pit. And we'd be going along the road and said, right to the top of there. And we used to have to stop and then run up this slag heap till we got to the top, shattered, and back again. So it was a hardening course that before you started doing any parachuting. And there at also at Hardwick they had didn't think they had any basics really of parachuting. But from there, after they would possibly be about a month there at Chesterfield, Hardwick Hall, it was the main headquarters. And we went on to Ringway then to do our parachute training. And there at Ringway, in the hangars there, they had all the apparatus there for training. From the top of the one of the hangars, they had a steel wire running right down, and you got hold of a pulley, you went right to the top, got hold of a pulley, and came hurtling down to the bottom, and there'd be an instructor at the bottom releasing you onto a mat, and that they were teaching you how to land, how to fall, feet and knees together, and just rolling over. And then they had another apparatus there, I remember it well, called the winch, and that was in you went to the top of this cage kind of thing, and got into a harness, and then you jumped out, and it came down. It was like a winch that, I forget how they described it, but pulleyed that it stopped you falling, you know, just falling down, straight down. And also there was, you was in a harness, swinging about and doing all your movements, and then releasing yourself onto the ground. That was mostly the basic training for parachuting. And of course, then this came to the parachute jumping, and that was round Knutsford. We used to do that, and we used to go in out there, and we used to have these little hats on there with a band round, a rubber band round, and a parachute smock. And right, we used to go into the these cages and go up to about 300 feet. And then we used to, in a little cage there, about four of us to jump in. And then we used to jump out. You see, well, you had to be there. There was this instructor. He could stand on the side of the basket. And, you know, and all this, I thought, oh, this clever, anybody can do that. So I got on it, and I could walk round the basket, because I knew how to shoot on, I wouldn't go over it. He thought it was amazing, but I thought, nothing to it, this, you see. So anyhow, we did our jumping. We did, forget how many. We had to do eight jumps altogether, but we did mostly from the basket. And then the aircraft they were using then was Whitley's, the old Whitley, with an aperture in the centre of it. And where there were 10 parachutists used to sit in, five either side, and round the hole, one over, and you should just jump out to the side, and invariably you hit your nose on this side of the chute going down.
Side of the hole?
And if you had a big nose like me, I used to nearly always hit mine across there. Used to go across. So we did, I don't know, gosh, probably about two aircraft descents. And then we did a night one, where we went a night jump, and that was at Knutsford, Tatton Park. That was the place where we used to jump over. And they had a pond in the centre of Tatton Park, and sometimes quite a number of people used to land in that. That was after, I think we did 10 to pass out, could be wrong, 8 or 10 jumps, and then we got our wings. We were presented with our wings at Ringway, and everybody, they got the red berries and off into town on the booze, and that's, I thought it was great, you see, a padder. Then I was posted, they said to me, where would you got a choice here of going to? You can either go to the 13th Lancashire Parachute Battalion or the 12th Yorkshire Parachute Battalion. Well, I'd already been in the signal platoon of the 13th Parachute Battalion, because that was the old 2nd Force South Lancs that was changed to the 13th Paras. And so I thought, well, I don't want to go back to my old unit. I'll go to the 12th Yorkshire, a different one, which used to be the 10th Green Howards.
Why didn't you want to go back to your old unit?
Because I'd already been with them, and then, of course, they refused me, well, you know, for being colourblind. Well, they didn't. It was the actual people where we went to started our training, you see, for the paras. So I went to the 12th, and which would be about January 1944. And I joined the 12th Yorkshire Parachute Battalion, and I thought it was wonderful. We had I went into the signal platoon, and The lads in the signal platoon was, you know, great, you know, I thought marvellous. And it was quite good. So that was from January. So then we're doing our training, quite a number of parachute descents we did there. And was mostly from Stirling aircraft. And then we heard about the second front was going to open shortly. I thought, oh, well, that's what it's all about. That's why we've come. So anyhow, went right up to, we did a few before D-Day. We was posted down to Kievel and round there, and at Kievel we saw, was actually shown where we were going to drop in Normandy. And there were models there which were quite good, but I can honestly say I didn't take much notice of them. I thought, well, we'll be all together and we'll all drop in one place, so there was always somebody who know the way, you see, how to get there. So that was that. So came June the 5th, and we all went down to the aircraft. We were all lined up there, threw parachutes and hung about, and then we heard rumours that it'd been cancelled, but we still hung about down there, didn't know what was happening, because nobody ever told you anything. And then it came through that, right, take your shoes off, back again to where we got them from, and back to the camp. Oh. So that must have been the 4th, because it was cancelled for the 5th. But on the 5th, we went back again to get our chutes and to the aircraft. So it'd been a night of the 5th. And there we were, got to know our air crew. And a funny thing about it, that on a couple of aircraft in front of us, there was a bloke that was a pal of mine that went to school with Reggie Gunn. And he was an air gunner. And he was on this other plane, you see, but as a, don't know whether he was there as an observer or what. But that was that. That's the last I saw of Reggie Gunn, because his plane got shot down and he was killed. So anyhow, about 10 o'clock, we knew it was on. We were told it was on. And we were told to emplane. And of course, we went in. I was with C Company. So I'm in the signal platoon, and we are allocated planes from, I was attached to C Company, signal, three signalers were attached to C Company. I had a radio set in my kit bag, and a couple of batteries, and my own kit bag with all my gear in it, and that's how we jumped. Incidentally, we had have white silk gloves, so this was to stop the chafing of the hand when you released it and went down. So anyhow, we emplaned, and I thought, well, this is it. How do you feel? All right. Lot of chatter going about, you know, but I can't say that I was frightened at all. It was going into the unknown, and you didn't know what it was going to be like there. I think it was more excitement than anything. And, right, so we took off along with all the rest of the aircraft, and we didn't know much about it, couldn't see anything, so, but I believe we circled around for some time before we actually then, you know, we were told that we're over the sea and we're not far from our destination. And then it was stand to. And we all stood up in the in the fuselage, the bottom, the tail, the doors, what they open up, and it's about a 6 foot aperture there that you're going to jump out of. So there we're all like, and I was number two to go. There was the company commander, which I think was Major Stevenson, and myself and his batman, and anyhow, he said, I can see it round there, I see flak coming up at us and all that, and you could see it outside, the banging and everything. And then he said, right, watch it now. And he said that right, green light on, go. And he was out, and I was next out, all pushing out, you know. And it was so quiet, except for all the flak coming around. There wasn't a lot over us, but you could see it in the sand, you could hear it. And anyhow, I looked down. Oh, I released my thing, and my kit bag just went out of my grip. I just went hurtling down, you see. So I thought, oh, God, that's that.